The News from Lake Wobegon podcast is brought to you by Gold Medal Flour. With varieties from all-purpose to better-for-bread to whole wheat, Gold Medal makes flour for all your baking needs. Over 125 years of baking success.
Oh, it's so good to be with you, all of our friends out here on this voyage across the Western Caribbean and here in the sun and get off the frozen tundra for a while. Though I have no doubt that when I get back to Lake Wobegon, the snow will be falling and we'll have a little bit more winter. You don't get away so easily as all of that. Traveling out here on this beautiful ship, I think about all the people I would like to have brought along, many of whom are dead and have been dead for many years. I don't know if they would have enjoyed it or not. I would have liked to have given them the chance. They were dark people. My people, they believe that life is adversity, and if it should seem pleasant or easy, be patient, this will pass, and reality will return. I think about my Uncle Jack and his long string of bad luck and how I might have interrupted that by bringing him out on a trip. He was a dairy farmer. Well, that was his problem, you know, was milking Holsteins. He milked about 25 head, not such a big herd, and then one of his favorite cows turned against him. It was in the wintertime, of course, when most bad things happen, and he was out there at 5 o'clock in the morning, and the cow stepped on his foot when he was going to attach the milking machine to her, and then he leaned in, and she swatched him in the face with her tail, which was full of fresh manure, and he lost his temper. Barn rage, it happens more often than you may think. They're all alone out there in the barn, and you just, of course, they would never tell anybody about this afterward, but he just hauled off and he hit her as hard as he could, hit her in the forehead, which didn't hurt the cow, but it really soured her attitude, and she turned others in the herd against him, and he could just feel it in the morning and in the evening when he went out there, see those big brown eyes rolling towards him and seeing those tails switching back and forth as he walked down that narrow aisle between the two long rows of rumps and see those sphincters getting ready to loosen. It just took all the joy out of dairy farming and so he switched to row crops, but he didn't exactly have the mechanical aptitude for this, and the very first fall that he was harvesting corn, he lost a finger in the corn picker, a crucial finger on his left hand, and he picked it up off the ground and came into the house with it. My aunt was there. She asked if he wanted a bandage. He said, no, just a clean dish towel will be fine. And she said, do you want me to drive you in? No, he said, I'll drive your car, though. It's got automatic transmission, so it'll be easier for me in my condition. She said, you want a cup of coffee? He said, well, that'd be nice. So she poured him a cup of coffee. She asked if he wanted a sandwich. He said, what do you have? I've got ham and cheese. Well, he said, that'd be okay. So he got in the car holding his finger in one hand, wrapped with a clean dish towel, and a cup of coffee between his knees and a ham and cheese sandwich, no mayo, no mustard, on his lap. And he was distracted, had other things on his mind. This was deer rutting season. This was towards the end of October. Didn't stop to think about that. Up ahead, there was an elderly male deer who was waiting in the underbrush, a deer who had lost out in the courtship trials, and he'd been turned down by all of the attractive younger females and been driven off by younger males, better-looking males. This may happen to you, to me, someday, but here he was. He was in a suicidal mood and poised at the side of the ditch, and as the old Plymouth came by, the deer timed his leap and killed himself against the grill of that Plymouth, and his enormous carcass rolled up and smashed through the windshield, and my uncle hit the steering wheel hard, and the impact turned on a radio station that he never ever listened to, and it was Frank Sinatra singing, "I've Got You Under My Skin," deep down in the heart of me, and he looked up, and here was one point of the antler that was just about 3 inches from his right eye. It was a hard moment in his life. He was to realize how hard a few weeks later. That was when he got Lyme disease from this little adventure. And life just seemed to go downhill for him. He was out shoveling snow that winter off his roof, which a man wants to do, you know, because it's a man's duty to do this in Lake Wobegon. His wife, my aunt, was telling him how he could get a teenager to do this, no trouble whatsoever. They'd do it for $5-6 an hour, but he wanted to do it because a man is supposed to be able to shovel his own snow off the roof. If you let somebody else do it, this is the first step down a slippery path, and the other steps may come quicker than you think. You let somebody else shovel the snow off your roof, and before you know it, people are trying to tell you that you should not be driving late at night. And then people are going to be reaching out to hold your elbow as you come downstairs. You don't want that. And then before you know it, they're going to be pulling the car keys out of your clenched fist. And then they're going to be sending you off to the Good Shepherd home. And you're going to be hanging out with people you've been trying to avoid all of your life. It's not dementia. They're just boring, that's all. And pretty soon you catch a case of dementia from them, and you no longer know where you are or why, and then the final curtain comes ringing down, and they pack you off to Lindbergh Mortuary, and he snips your ankles and your wrist and fills you full of this evil-tasting fluid that you're going to be sucking on for the next 200 years and dresses you up in the suit that you used to wear to other people's funerals and puts you in a little tight box, and you're wheeled into the Lutheran church in past your pew. Wait a minute. And up to the front of the sanctuary you go, and the pastor delivers this eulogy which bears no relationship to your life and all the wonderful things you do. He just cited a few things you did out of obligation. But the walleyes that you caught and the good times you had in the dark that only a few people know about, mainly one, and the time that you tipped over Mr. Harold Starr's outhouse, that beautiful, beautiful summer day when he came out to the outhouse knowing that you were there, but there was nothing he could do to help himself. He carried a shotgun in one hand and carried a lantern in the other, and he was cursing you and your friends sitting out there in the tall weeds, but you just waited until he got inside. And when you heard the sound of him doing his business, you ran forward and you pushed that outhouse over onto the door, and the lantern broke and flames burst and the shotgun went off. But there was only one way out for him. It was just out through the hole he had been sitting on, and there was the pit there. He forgot about that. And pretty soon he was in it. It was a royal moment for you, and this is not mentioned at all in your eulogy. They just touch lightly on a few things, and then you're packed into this long black car. This is your last car ride, and off you go. You meant to go other places, but up to the top of the hill you go, and they carry you over rough ground, the pallbearers, who you had no voice in selecting at all, and include some people you never cared for at all. And they set you down on a brass frame, and they sing Children of the Heavenly Father, but only two verses. They don't sing any more than that. One of your favorite hymns, and nobody in your family throws herself onto the coffin and weeps that she cannot live without you. Nobody does this. And they just pray off an index card, and then they walk away, and they leave you out there. So that was why he shoveled the snow off his roof, was to put off that swift descent. And then he had his stroke. He had his big stroke up there on the roof of his house, having only shoveled off about two-thirds of it. He lay up there, having had a stroke, and his jacket froze to the roof, his shearling jacket, the skin out and the fleece in. He lay there as cars drove by, honking at him, and all he could do was just waggle one finger. It was a sad end for a good man. I thought about him this last fall when I had my own little cerebrovascular incident. I was with friends, and not that that's necessarily a good thing, you know, when suddenly you feel something happen inside your brain, and the words that come out of your mouth are all slurred, and they ask you if you're okay, and you say, as you were brought up to say, you say, "I'm just fine." And you walk away. You don't want to ask for help from people. You don't want to be a burden. So you get in your car and you drive 42 miles per hour down the freeway off to the emergency room of a hospital that you know well, which is crowded with people who have little various complaints that they're telling the triage nurse about, their little eczema, little skin rash, little tennis elbow, and a woman just ahead of you with a mole that seems to be doing curious things. And you wait your turn in line, as you were brought up to do, and you wait for the triage nurse to turn to you, and you say, "I am having a stroke." You say this with remarkable clarity, and they take you back, and they run you through an MRI machine, and in you go for 45 minutes of wanging and banging and dinging and buzzing, and they discover, indeed, you have had this attack, this projectile has come up out of your own heart, and it has gone up into your brain, into what neurologists call the silent area of the brain, a part where not much is going on at any particular time, which some of us have more of than others. What we might call the Western North Dakota of the brain, a part where if a meteorite should drop to Earth, we might not hear about it for weeks. And so you are mostly intact. You're mostly all right. You have a chance to walk around through the stroke ward of your hospital, walk up and down with two little cotton print gowns on you, one fore, one aft, a monitor, little suction cups on your chest, and pushing a tall pole on a tripod on wheels with a clear plastic bag with this rat poison blood thinner in it running into your veins, and you look into the doors of other rooms. You shouldn't do that, of course, but you do your curious, morbid curiosity. And you look in and you see elderly people your age who have had catastrophic events here. They're slumped down in chairs. They're gonna have to go through kindergarten all over again, and they're in their extremely late 50s. You see people lying speechless in beds, and suddenly you feel enormously lucky. You feel fabulously lucky. And you think of this old song that we associate with large ships.
Nearer, my God, to thee, nearer to thee.
though like a wanderer, the sun gone down, darkness be over me, my rest a stone. Angels to beckon me, nearer my God to thee, nearer my God to thee, nearer to thee. Then let the way appear, steps on to heaven. All that thou givest me, in mercy given. Angels to beckon me, nearer my God to thee, nearer my God to thee, nearer to thee.
Mr. Pat Donahue.
Thank you so much.